another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler.
Hi folks, this is Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world, the changing times, and the things that we can all do to live a better life when times get tough, or even if they don't. Coming to you today with episode 400 from Arlington, Texas. And today we're going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to stop and I'm going to talk about why I do this show. I'm going to talk about some of the things that I see out there that I think are a danger to ourselves and our way of lives, and some of the things that I think are happening every day that people don't even realize are happening to them, and how I, you know, kind of envision the Survival Podcast now as a way to help people live that better life, you know, whether times get tough or even if they don't, and the why behind it. And I'll tell you guys up front today, those of you that are new to the show that weren't here when there was a couple dozen people listening to me, and that's what it was at first, a couple dozen people for a couple months, that would look at it today and go, well, of course this guy does a show every day. Of course this guy's passionate about what he does. It's his job. It's his business. Everything he has is invested in it. I'll tell you that we could survive without the show if we had to. And I'll tell you that the show was never intended to be a business, at least on the level that it is. And I'll tell you that I did the show with the frequency and the passion in the beginning when it was just me and my car, and for almost the first year the show didn't earn a dime, and even when people offered to give donations, I refused them. I want people that are kind of newer to the show to realize why I do the show. And I think that today will be a great show as I explain that. And I also think those of you who have been around since the beginning, I think you'll enjoy it too, because it'll be kind of a little time travel back to the beginning, at least in a few parts. Before that, we do have housekeeping. I want to warn you right now, if you are a person that usually skips housekeeping with fast forward, don't do it today. There is a huge contest with a bunch of stuff, and there's kind of a sad announcement I'm going to give in the middle of housekeeping today, but it's an announcement I have to make, and you need to hear it because it might, I don't know if it will, but it might affect you. I would estimate it affects somewhere around 50 to 60 people out there in our audience, so please hang on for that. Before we have that announcement, though, let's talk about our sponsors. Sponsor of the day number one, Safe Castle Royal. Everything you possibly need for your prepping adventures, from food storage to emergency supplies, you name it. And, you know, I don't think I mention this often, but they have another website for their shelters, and they make some of the most amazing hardened shelters that there are out there. So if you have a need for a shelter on your property, you should check that out, too. Safe Castle Royal. Remember, they have a buyer's discount club. Big discounts on everything for the rest of your life for $29. You can buy that from them, or you can buy a Members Brigade membership from me and get it for free for lifetime, and that's just one benefit of the MSB. So keep that in mind as well. Next up today, MERS-radio.com. Again, M-U-R-S, little dash, radio.com. You know what? I love having that guy as a sponsor. It's one little guy running one little operation with just one simple set of gear. And it combines to do some pretty cool stuff. And I have that gear in my home, and I use it all the time. It tells me when somebody's sneaking around my fence, and it tells me if my dog's trying to get out. Because what it does is it allows you to take the MERS frequency radios and use them for direct communication to anybody that you give another radio to, set to a common frequency, have a base station that's plugged into your wall that's always on, and then have remote sensors out on your property to tell you when there's movement in a particular area. I can't tell you how cool this product is for the low cost that it has to be able to do this much and combine security and secondary communications on your homestead property. Please check them out. Now, time for the sad announcement before the contest. I don't know how sad it is. For some of you guys, might be, I don't even care. For some of you, it may really affect you. I had been planning to be at Dirt Time in Wyoming 2010, in June this year. I talked about it quite a bit. I know quite a few people that registered to go were there, going to be there because I was going to be there. Due to circumstances completely beyond my control, I cannot be at Dirt Time this year. So if you were going just to see me, you may want to request a refund. I don't think they'll have any problem giving you that. According to Alan, they have a waiting list of people, and I know that they have plenty of time to change your plans if you're only coming to see me. If you were going for the event and it was just nice that I was going to be there, please don't cancel on my behalf. I'm not asking anybody to do that. I do have to tell you why I can't go. It's not my personal life. It's not anything that's preventing me from doing it. Ron Hood, who I've become very, very good friends with, and I'm now a business partner with, and we're working on several joint ventures together, and I am a writer, in fact, actually the modern survival editor for his new magazine, Survival Quarterly, has come to some type of argument with the folks at Wilderness Way and Dirt Time, and they have banned him from the event. He is not welcome there. Since Ron is my business partner, and since if I went to Dirt Time, I would not just be Jack from the Survival Podcast, I would also be Jack from Hoodlums and Jack from Ron's magazine as a senior editor representing not just TSP but Ron and Survival Quarterly. There's a conflict of interest, and as long as Ron Hood's not welcome, I'm not welcome. Now, I'm not saying they said I couldn't come. They want me to come. I'm telling you, as long as Ron's not welcome, I don't feel welcome. And I have no animosity toward those guys over at Wilderness Way. They can run their show their way. I have no animosity in Ron toward this. Ron's been very supportive. And to be fair to Alan Halkin over there, he has been very supportive. He said, whatever you do, we'll be okay with. So I've thought about this for several weeks, and I've made this decision. I felt it was the only business decision I could make. There is no more to the story from my end than that. Now, let's move on to something a hell of a lot more exciting. Let's do a contest today. Here's what I'm going to do. I have two parts of the contest. The first one is typical. You have to be registered in the contest, which means you've gone and filled out the form on the listener appreciation contest, and then you have to send me an email. In that email, you have to put a code word I'm about to give you. In the body of the email, give me your name, the email address you use to register, and your physical mailing address, because all of these are things I'm going to be mailing to you, or someone's going to be mailing to you. I don't want to track you down. And I will give away a prize. Let's see, I'm giving away six. So I will do to respond at number 10, 20, 30, 40, 80, and 100. 10, 20, 30, 40, 80, and 100. That gets everybody a chance to win. What am I giving away? Three first editions of Survival Quarterly magazine, which I will personally autograph before I mail to you. Your choice when I contact you, I can autograph the front cover, or I can autograph the part of the magazine where my article is. One SOE single point tactical sling. One Lakota Silver 1 ounce round, American open currency, standard approved currency value, 50 trade silver, 1 ounce of beautiful frosted silver. I'm also giving away one X-Pack water filter from our sponsor, Common Sense Prep. That will come directly from them. The X-Pack water filter is really badass, retail value $69. Which one will you win? I don't know. Once I have winners, we'll randomly assign you a prize. I'll tell you what you've won. Here's the code word. It's simple. It's the number 400, 400. That is all. Put that in the subject line and send an email to jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com. 400 in the subject line, your shipping address in the body of the email, and the number 400 in the subject line, and you can win one of those six prizes. Second contest today. So there's two contests. This one is just anybody can play. It's up to you. If you're already an MSB member, you probably won't want to do it. I guess you could because you could cancel your existing membership. I'm going to give you a code. And when I give you that code, you go to join the Member Support Brigade on our website, and you get the Member Support Brigade for $25 a year. Not for your first year, for every year thereafter as long as you stay a member. It will apply to the recurring billing every year. All right? I'm only going to do this one time. And I'm feeling generous because this is episode 400. I'm doing that for the first 10 people that sign up. So let me give you that code. The code is, well, I don't want you to have to remember two things today, so it's also 400, 400. That will work for the first 10 people to try to use it. You'll get MSB for $25 for your first year and $25 recurring. Best thing I've ever done with MSB for anybody. It only works for the first 10 people. Don't send me an email for that. Go to thesurvivalpodcast.com, click on Member Support Brigade on there, and go ahead and try to sign up using the code. If it doesn't work, that means you weren't one of the first 10 people to try to do it. All right, let's go ahead and move into the main topic of today's show. Okay, as I talked to you today about the why behind TSP, and I know that intro segment was long, but there was a contest in there, and I had to do the Dirt Time announcement today. So I apologize for the long intro segment, but now that we're here and we're talking about what I want to talk to you about today, I don't think it would be right to start this out without telling you about the two biggest influences behind why I started doing the show. Not why I think the way I do, not why I use the topics that I use, not an example that I followed, but pure inspiration that the show was something I could do and that people might listen to it. The first one is a guy named Chris Future. I mentioned him on my website, and he was the first person that I ever heard do a mobile podcast. Get into a car, drive around, and podcast every single day. And he was a libertarian commentator, so obviously he resonated with me. But all he talked about was politics. And, toward the end when I was listening, before I was doing my own show, it was always about the election because that's what was going on. And I thought to myself, this is not really how I want to spend my time, but I love what he's doing. I love that he's making a difference, and he has a huge audience, a big audience. And because of that big audience, I know he's impacting people's lives. And if he can do it from his car, then, I'm just crazy enough to believe that I can do it from my car. So I looked into, true podcasting gear and realized how expensive it was and decided I'm going to try it with a little MP3 recorder. And that's why the audio was so terrible in the very beginning. The other thing, the kind of last kick in the ass, so to speak, that made me say, hey, you have no excuses, there's no reason for you to hold back, was I watched a video of the Gervais family out in Central California, and I watched how they were growing 6,000 pounds of food in their own backyard, and I watched the change that they had created in their own lives, and I thought, that's what I've always believed, you have to change yourself if you want to change others. And when I looked at those two, I said, you have no excuse, you know things. You have knowledge, and you need to share the knowledge. And I didn't know how much knowledge I had at the time. I didn't realize how much I already knew. It was a learning experience for me to reveal to myself what I had learned over the years as I began doing the show and as I began to learn new things so that I could pass them on. It was an amazing, life-changing experience for myself. So in doing the show, I followed Jules Gervais' example. I've changed myself to help change the lives of people in our country and from the emails I get around the world, Iraq, Afghanistan, Japan, Australia, the United Kingdom. It's if you can't tell, I'm a little emotional when I say that. It's not bragging. It's overwhelming, and it means so much to me that people from all over the world tune in to hear what this redneck has to say every day about being prepared for the future. So that is where it came from. Where my journey started really was that I was this young, energetic guy in my 20s, my early 20s, and I was working my ass off for companies that didn't appreciate me, and I bounced around from job to job every year or two, and I worked my way up into sales, for a company that you had to have a bachelor's degree to be in sales for them. And I did a really good job. And then I went after a job where you had to have a master's degree to be in sales for them. And I got that job. And that led to another job that required a master's degree to get a job as a salesperson. And everybody in the company was, 10, 15 years older than me and had more experience, but I still got the job. And those of you that don't know, I've never stepped foot into a college except as a guest speaker a couple times. So I had no degree. I had lackadaisical grades in high school. In spite of being extremely intelligent, the school bored me. And I did really good in my sales career, really good. Made a lot of money, traveled all over the country, expense accounts, company, car, you name it. I had it all going for me. And what it did for me is it did what it does to most Americans. Unfortunately, it did it to me while I was young and had plenty of time to recover from it. It got me deep into credit card debt. It got me distanced from my family, my wife and my son. I would leave for a sales event, and I would come back, and it looked like my son had grown while I was gone. And we grew a garden during that period of time and all, but it just wasn't the same. And we ended up moving to Pennsylvania for the big job, and I was traveling around there. And then September 11th, 2001 came. And it wasn't a life-changing event for me in the way that it was for some that I went and looked at it and said, if that could happen here, it could happen anywhere. And I felt afraid. That wasn't what changed my life. What changed my life was sitting in a hotel room in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania that night, listening to my wife cry on the other end of the phone and thinking to myself, I don't belong here. This is not where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be at home with her. And I thought about that, and it was another 2 years before I ended up leaving that job, but my heart was really never in it again, and I never traveled the rest of the time as much as I should have, because all I wanted to be was home, where if anything went wrong, I could be there, because that was my job. And during that time, as we finally decided to move back to Texas and leave that job and not have to travel anymore, and I made a career shift that cost me, you know, it was a six-figure reduction in salary. I'll just leave it at that, to make that change. And at the end of that, I went, well, we reduced the salary, but we didn't reduce the debt. And we got here, and we were okay. We could pay all our bills, but we were still over $20,000 in debt, and my salary had been just diminished, just drastically cut to pieces. And I said, we got to get rid of this debt, and we got to change things. And we got to make our house a home, and then we got to make our home into a homestead. And that started me on a journey that led me to buy that second piece of property, pay off all my debt, pay off my cars, and eventually wind up in a car one day talking to you guys and telling you, hey, I know how it is. I know what it's like to be on the ground, and I know what it's like to be flying high. But I know that in the end, when something tragic hits your life, it brings us all to the same level really quick, so we need to be prepared for it. And that is really what led me to do the Survival Podcast. When I say it wasn't a business plan, it wasn't like I'm going to go create this show, and then the show's going to become my career, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life doing it, and it's going to pay my bills. That really wasn't the plan. The plan was, you know what, maybe I'll get a couple thousand people to listen to me, and I'll make a difference for them so that they can shortcut some of the lessons that I've learned the hard way. That would be great. And then on top of that, I said to myself, you know, maybe I could make a little bit of money. Maybe if I get a couple thousand listeners, I'll pick up a couple sponsors, and that'll work out. Then something magic happened. Something amazing happened. And that amazing thing was you. You, the audience. You grew, and you grew, and you grew, and you grew. And every time I felt down or like thought, man, I really let that episode fall flat, I didn't do that good of a job, I get emails saying, no, that was a great episode. That was awesome. That's going to change the way I'm going to act. That's going to change what I'm going to do. And I started getting emails from people that said, I learned about your show from my buddy at the bar who learned about your show from his next door neighbor who learned about your show from his boss at work. And I was absolutely blown away. And I realized something. There's a reason for my success. It's not my voice. It's not my passion. It's simply that there is a desire for this type of information. And when someone brings it to the table well prepared, well thought out, and well presented, it catches fire. And up until I did it, no one else had done it. I was the first mover into this realm, into the concept of survival podcasting with any frequency. There were some people out there that played around with it. They did an okay job. They didn't do it every day. They didn't even do it every week. I did it every single day. Because of that, there was a response from the audience that grew virally, and it's still growing now. And I imagine if I ever came out and said, I'm tired, I can't do anymore, I'd probably have people lined up at my front door going, you have to keep doing the show. It's taken on a life of its own, and it's become something. And as I watched it do that, I realized, hey, we can make this work. And I started getting people emailing me, go, Jack, hey, can I give you a donation? I love what you're doing. I'd like to give you some money. And I went, no way. No way will I take money from anybody simply for doing the show. So I started thinking about it. I said, well, if the audience wants to support the show, then what I need to do is give the audience a way to support the show that will be more valuable to them than any amount of money that they pay me. So I came up with Member Support Brigade, and initially, I don't think I had the value there. It was really, at this point, okay, guys, I'll take donations to get this thing off the ground and make it better. But over time, as I started adding vendor discounts and things, I now believe that when you spend $50 a year on Members Brigade, you get a $500 return your first year easy. If you use the discounts, and if you use the ebooks, and if you use everything that's there, it's probably more. It could easily be $1,000. It could easily be more than that. And so I built that program to allow the show to evolve and become what it has become. But, again, it wasn't really my plan to make it a full-time business. There were certain things that were eating at me that I had to help people with. And I couldn't live with myself. I couldn't wake up and look at that man in the mirror and go, hey, you're doing a good job, Jack. I couldn't feel good about myself anymore if I kept my mouth shut about the things that I knew were going wrong. And the first one was the stock market. And if you listen to my show in June, July, August, and into September of 2008, You had every opportunity in the world to save yourself from losing a bunch of money. Because I basically screamed into the microphone, the stock market crash is coming. They're lying to you when they tell you it's not. Every honest analyst is saying it's coming. I don't know how bad it'll be. I don't know how long it's going to last. And I don't know what the total ramifications are. And I'm not saying the end of the world is coming. But I'm telling you, you're about to lose half or more of your retirement savings and any stocks that you're holding if you don't just back out now, put it in cash, and wait, and then figure out what to do. The worst thing that would happen would be I would be wrong, the market would maybe put on another 8 points, and you'd lose the potential gain. What I said was, I could pull my money out, and I could lose an 8-point gain or a 4-point gain, and I'd be okay with it. But if I held on to it and I lost half my money in spite of my gut telling me not to, that was something I couldn't live with. So that was the first one. I'm like, you got to get your money, and you got to make it safe. And as I started doing that, I started thinking about why we had been able to solve so many of our problems. And I realized it was because we never listened to the financial advisors who said, put all of your money that you're saving into a deferred account, you know, 401k, IRA, Roth IRA, SEP, whatever it was. Because what they always said was put away 90 days of an emergency fund, but they never said, hey, don't start contributing until you have it. So they didn't even really mean that, but I also realized that wasn't enough. I realized that we had always decided that there would always be this split in our funding. And if we put money into a tax-deferred account, that was one thing, but there would be an equal amount or close to it going into another savings account or another savings vehicle that was liquid, meaning we could get our hands on it. And I realized how many things we had bailed ourselves out with, how many stupid decisions we had fixed over the years because of that. So I started bringing that message. Don't put all your money away for retirement. It can even be for retirement, but don't make it have to be for retirement. Please keep some of your money liquid. That message caught on, and I think it's helped people. But there was a bigger thing, and it went back to that video I watched with Jules Gervais, and I just thought about how people went to the grocery store every day, some of them twice a week, some of them once a week, and they had become so dependent on that ability to just go down to the store and buy more food. And having been in corporate sales for almost 10 years before making that switch, and still being kind of that person connected to the business world and knowing what was going on, I understood something that I don't think most Americans understood, just-in-time inventory. Just-in-time inventory means, hey, you know what, if we're going to run a grocery store and we're going to have a truck show up with a certain commodity once every 4 days, then we want 4.2 days worth of inventory on that product and nothing more. Because that inventory sitting on our shelves is like, it's like debt to a store, right? Unsold inventory is a hole in profit. So they want as little inventory as possible to meet the demand. They want to exactly calculate that. And to be fair to especially the big grocery stores, they've brought in huge computer systems. They've invested millions and millions of dollars. They run their shipping by computer. They run everything by computer. And they do a very good job with just-in-time inventory. An outstanding job. An amazing job. They nail it. One problem. As soon as something in the supply line creates a hiccup, it all falls apart. It absolutely falls apart. Because if you only have 5 days worth of something that gets delivered every 4 days, and 6 days go by without it being delivered, guess what? It's not there. And I was watching gas prices. We remember what they did in late 2008. $3, $4, $4.50. Diesel fuel going for $5. And the truckers, folks, the truckers got a tenth of a degree from going on strike. If the fuel prices had not come back down, they were going to park their rigs. It wasn't even going to be a strike. It was going to be self-preservation. They were getting to a point where it was costing them more money to move their truck than they were getting paid to move their truck. They were losing money by driving. And they hung on right at the end just because they're like, well, if the prices come back down, we don't want to lose our contracts and our jobs. And I saw that and I went, man, America doesn't understand this. And I started looking at all the other threats. Pandemics, earthquakes, floods. Yes, climate change. Not global warming because of CO2, but yes, climate change. Aquifer depletion. Monoculture farming. And I started realizing there was such a risk to our food supply. And I started looking at all the other survival sites. And the emphasis was always guns, guns, guns. And folks, I'm a huge proponent of guns. If you haven't listened to me long enough, you may get the wrong idea today. I have lots of guns. I will defend my home. I will defend my friends. I will defend my family, and I will defend my neighbor. Even my neighbor that doesn't think I should have a gun, I will still defend him. Maybe he'll learn something from it. But it was guns, 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 and I asked a question. How many times have you been in a fight in your life? And most people said one, two, or none. And then my next question is, how many times have you had to eat in your life? And the answer is 3 times a day, minimum, every day of my life. And I wondered, how can we focus so much on one, it's important, but one aspect of prepping, almost to the exclusion of the others, specifically the ability to feed ourselves. When, if the shit hits the fan, folks, you don't know if you'll need your gun tomorrow. You might. I hope you don't. You might. You better have one. But I'll tell you, you're going to need to eat tomorrow, and you're going to need to eat the next day, and you're going to need to eat the day after that, and you're going to need to eat over and over and over again. And if you stop eating, eventually you get real skinny, and then you fall over and die, and they put you in a hole in the ground. And when that happens, you have failed to survive. You've broken the number one rule of survival. Wake up breathing tomorrow. So I started preaching about, let's make sure we're storing food. And I started bringing in gardening topics. And I almost didn't in the beginning. And I'm so glad I didn't make that mistake. Because I thought, will they receive gardening well? Or will they see it as kind of like this, fruity thing or something, you know? Not really a manly topic. And I had mostly men as an audience then. I didn't have, today I'd say I have a split of about 40% women. At the time it was probably 90% men. And I started getting emails from guys going, hey, we're putting a garden in. He's this big manly guy with his AR-15 putting a garden in. I went, wow, America's ready for this. They understand. They're taking control. And I thought about a quote as I did this from Jules Gervais from that little video. And he said, growing food may be the most dangerous occupation on the planet. Because when you grow your own food, you're in danger of becoming free. And I realized America decided, at least the people listening to the show, that were willing to pick up a garden trowel in addition to that gun to defend their home, picked up a garden trowel to defend their family's health, to defend their family's ability to feed itself. And to realize that was just as important as being able to defend against bad guys at the front door. That without the ability to feed ourselves, we have very little to defend. And as my knowledge about permaculture grew, I started to bring that into the show. And then that whole subject took off to where we could probably have a second show just about permaculture, and half the audience would tune in every day just to hear that show. But all of this was teaching me something about you. You're tired. You're sick and tired of being told the way that you have to live. You're disgusted with a system that doesn't respect your individual rights and your individual sovereignty anymore. You're fed up with a government that doesn't listen to you. And you're only willing to do so much to influence that government because you realized the government's not the problem, the people are. The fact that we have ass clowns in the Senate, the fact that we have ass clowns in the House, the fact that we have ass clowns for presidents, for the past 5 presidents, at least four, the past 4 presidents have been ass clowns. That's not a reflection of the president or the Congress or the Senate. That's a reflection of the people that continuously send these people back to their jobs. But there was a small segment of society that was beginning to say, we've had enough. We don't want this anymore. We don't want easy credit and shiny credit cards. We don't want a third mortgage or a fourth mortgage or a fifth mortgage on our home. We don't want a home to be called an asset when it's our biggest expense. We're tired of driving to work every day in a mobile metal coffin, working in an 8x8 cell they call a cubicle, and coming home to a nicely decorated prison. We want more. And as I realized that's who you were, I decided, well, that's what I was going to help you do. That's what I was going to help you find. And I would do it by journeying the journey with you, doing the things that I told you you needed to do right along your side. If I was going to tell you to store food, and in spite of the fact that I was already storing food, I was going to store more food. If I was going to tell you to grow food, I was going to grow more food than I've ever grown before in my life. If I was going to tell you to learn how to do projects, I was going to do projects and share them with you. And the reason I did that, and some people won't believe this, and if you don't believe this, I don't give a damn, because I care about you. I care about this country, and I care about every single human being on this planet that has taken the one step I think you need to take to be fully human, and that's to stand up and say, I'm a human being, and I have rights. And I don't care what the government says, I don't care what the world says, I don't care what the neighbor says, I know that I have rights simply because I exist. And every single person that makes that individual sovereign claim over their lives, I care about deeply, and I want to help you. I want to help you get to where you're going. I will not have all the answers. I will get things wrong. I will be completely wrong sometimes. I will be factually inaccurate, to coin a phrase, on some things. It will always be a mistake. It will never be on purpose. I will never lie to you. And when I'm wrong, and I find out I'm wrong, I have made it a habit to come out and say, hey guys, I'm sorry, I blew this one. I was wrong about it. They got me with that story about the frog in the hot water. I told that story like 4 or 5 times. Hey, you put a frog in a boiling pot of water. You turn the heat up slowly, slowly, slowly. He sits there and dies and doesn't know. And I found out that was a lie. If you start turning the heat up on a frog, if he can get out, he jumps the hell out. I didn't lie to you. I didn't know. Everybody thought that story was true. So there will be times when I'm wrong. There will be times when I'll make mistakes. And there will be times when I come to you with things that are not that important to you. You decide, this is not where my focus is. And all I ask is, hey, give me a chance to come back tomorrow. It'll be about something different. And I'll work really hard all the time to make sure that I'm always doing my best to give you guys exactly what I promise, which is helping you make decisions for yourself, helping you decide for yourself what you want. I've read comments in blogs out there and forums out there about my show, and I don't know who the hell these people are listening to because they're not listening to me. I've read comments, this guy just wants you to think like him politically. He's a shill for Bush. And I'm like, what? You know? Huh? I had so much animosity towards George Bush in his last year. It's even, I think I had more than I do for Barack Obama because I expected better out of the guy. I just don't know who these people are listening to. I have never told you what to believe. When I've done the few political shows that I've done, and I've said, call your congressional clown and tell him how you feel about this issue. I've told you how I feel about it, and what I've always said is, and if you disagree with me, and you think this is a good thing, and you want this, then you call him up, and you be the other side, and you tell him he should do it, and you tell him why. I don't know another person that comments about political commentary anywhere in talk radio or podcasting that tells their audience that. Now, why do I do that? So that I can say that I'm the only one that does it? Hell no, I didn't even think about that when I started doing it. I realized something. I can't tell you how to think. I can help you evolve your thinking and nothing more. That is all. If I tell you how to think, the worst thing that can happen is you listen to me and do what I tell you. That's horrible. Because then you only know what I've told you. You don't develop the skill sets, the critical thinking, the lifestyle capability to modify your lifestyle to fit what you want. Because it's not that important to me, you know, as long as we're not completely throwing the Constitution down the toilet, what law we pass and we don't pass. Because I'm still going to live my life my way. I've made that choice for myself. I want to help you make that choice for yourself. And I'm okay with, once you make that choice, you doing exactly the opposite of what I do, because that's true freedom. And that's the real reason I do this show, because I fear so much that that's what we've really lost in this country and around the world is true freedom. See, I began to realize that the greatest lie ever told to the American people that they believed in mass was that being able to vote for a politician you didn't want was freedom. That being able to have a say in how the tax dollars that you didn't want taken from you in the first place were spent was freedom. That being able to criticize somebody was freedom. So I realized that what freedom was something that we could never define. Freedom is undefinable because freedom is individual. Let me say it again. Freedom is not definable because freedom is individual. And what I mean by that is I could take two people and put them into identical circumstances in life without the ability for them to effectively change their circumstances. Limit them in such a way that's just the way it was going to be for them. If you think about it, we all live that way because we have this planet called Earth and we can't get off of it. And if we do, we have to take a little ship and have oxygen tanks. So we really all live that way anyway. But we have a lot of choices because it's a big planet and it's a big place with lots of choices. But if I took people and put them in a more narrowly defined situation like that, one of them could be free. Because he could be completely happy. He might not even ever learn what his limits are, because everything that individual wants is there, and all the freedoms that individual wants are there. So that individual's free. The other individual might want more than the situation allows, and if they're contained within it, they don't feel free. They don't have freedom. That's why freedom can't be defined. Because freedom to me is different than what freedom to you is. If you gave me 1,000 acres out in the middle of nowhere with a big giant fence around it, I might never see the fence as long as my family was there with me. I might never care that fence was there. To you, it might be like being in Alcatraz. I don't know what freedom is for you. And I can't tell you what freedom is for you. All I can tell you is what freedom means for me and let that inspire you to go out and find it for yourself. Freedom for me, you know what that means to me? It means that I get up and I do what I want instead of what somebody says I have to do. That's freedom. Freedom for me is I have the ability to kiss my wife good morning and kiss her good night every single day. Freedom for me is I've been able to watch my son do the final part of his growing up because I wasn't gone, and I've watched him turn into a man. Freedom for me is going out and playing with my dogs. Freedom for me is planting a tomato plant. Freedom for me is getting in my truck and driving somewhere out in the wilderness and taking a walk for 2 days and not giving a damn if anybody likes it that I haven't come back yet. That's what freedom is for me. Freedom for me is a well-stocked pantry so that I know if I can't go to the grocery store for 2 months, I don't even care. That's freedom for me. Freedom for me was realizing that as much as I pay attention to politics, there wasn't a hell of a lot that I could individually do. All I could do was vote my conscience, and when somebody told me I was wasting my vote for voting for a third party, I felt that they were the ones that were wrong, and that I didn't need to even justify it anymore. I didn't even need to explain it anymore. I was just going to do what I thought was right, because doing what you thought is right, that's freedom for me. And I don't ever think you're wasting something when you do what you think is right. And these are the things that I began to pull together and realize that America wanted. America wanted to hear that the way that they thought, the way that they felt, that nagging voice that was always inside of them, that whenever they spoke up, one of the orangutans around them clubbed them over the head and said, no, 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 stick with the social norms. Don't stick out like a sore thumb. Follow the system. Do the right thing. Blah, 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 blah. They wanted someone to stand up and say it out loud, so that they knew that that voice inside of them was the real them. That it was okay to listen to that voice inside. It's been longing to speak since you were a kid and killed it. And tried to shove it away deep inside of you so that it would shut up. And stop getting in the way of things, you know? I think we call it ADD today because we get annoyed with children that don't follow the system. I'll tell you something about my past. I don't think I've ever said this on the air before. I don't think I've ever said this publicly before. I've only shared it with a few people. Growing up as a child, I was not normal. I didn't know why I wasn't normal, but I knew I wasn't normal. Until my high school years, I finally started to fit in with people. But all through my grade school years, junior high even, I had a couple friends, but I really didn't fit in school. I always felt older than I was. I was always happier around adults. And in spite of my outgoing, energetic, in-your-face personality today, I was shy. I was shy around girls. I was shy meeting new people. I had this inescapable desire to be alone. There were times when I would, I think that's why I loved fishing. I could go anytime I wanted, and nobody wanted to go with me, and that was fine with me, and I learned on my own, but I would go spend hours and hours and hours alone. And as I got older, learned about deer hunting, I'd spend hours and hours in this little tiny stand up in a tree waiting for a deer completely alone, and I was never more content than I ever was in my life. Walk around through the woods learning the sounds that the animals make and imitating them. And I always felt more comfortable in something that was enclosed, like a car, or if I was sitting on a couch or something, being up against the back of it. Didn't know what that was about. Eventually decided, hey, I've got to, you know, just face life like everybody else and get over these little things. Several years ago, I started thinking about that, started doing research into those types of behaviors, and realized that before anybody knew what it was, I probably, as a child, had a condition known as Asperger's, which is a mild form of autism. And what I've grown to realize is that no one knew how to recognize it back then, and thank God they didn't. Because if anybody would have told me that was my problem and given me a crutch, I may have never become who I am today. So part of what I've learned is that we need to take away people's crutches. We need to take away people's excuses. And that's what I try to do here. That's why sometimes I sound arrogant. I sound arrogant, but it's not arrogance, it's confidence. And it's not confidence in me, it's confidence in you. When I say you can do something, and this is the way to get it done, that's not me being arrogant, that's me saying, hey, you know what? Whoever you are out there, the fact that you pushed play, and you listened this long, and you've heard this much, means that you have inside of you the capability to do the same things that I've done, and I believe that about you. Now, if you want to call that arrogant, I'm sorry, you can kiss my ass. And maybe that is arrogant. But I don't know any other way to be. And I can tell you right now that if a young child growing up in the 70s and the 80s with Asperger's, before anybody knew what it was and had any magic drugs to treat it or any other crap or therapy or behavior and talking to some guy that's never accomplished anything in his life and droning on about your problems was supposed to solve that problem. If I can become who I've become, then you can become anything you want. Because here's the reality. In spite of my flaws, I'm exactly the man I want to be right now. And if that's arrogant, so be it. I just find it liberating to be able to say that. And I want you to have the liberty to say the same things. I want you to go home to your house every night, and if you're married, I want you to be in joy to see your wife or your husband. I want you to know that that's more important than storing food. That the survival aspect of survivalism is not just about surviving as an individual, but surviving as a family, and indeed surviving as a nation. That's why I get on the air every day and I tell you the things that I have to tell you. I want you to know that if you'll take the steps that I keep begging you to take, those of you who haven't yet, and get off your butts and walk out the back door and put your hands into the earth and grow food, it will liberate you. It will change your life. And it will do more than that. It will change the life of your family. It will give you a common bond. You'll have a child that grows up knowing that food does not come shiny waxed from the produce section of Kroger supermarket. That somebody somewhere sweats and toils to bring that food to a place where it can be consumed. They'll understand the entire process behind it. And they'll understand what a precious thing food really is. They'll understand it's our most important commodity that we have on the planet, maybe other than or equal to water. One thing I know with absolute certainty now is that I'll never stop telling people the truth. I'll never give up the Survival Podcast in its current format. You'll never see Jack Spirko on FM radio other than maybe to be interviewed or to do a guest spot, because I will have the freedom to say the things that I know are true, and I won't ever be put into a position where to appease a sponsor I have to not say something that I know to be true. My first loyalty is the audience. My only loyalty is the audience. I appreciate my sponsors. I love my sponsors, but I've told them flat out, you're lucky to be on my show. You're lucky to be my sponsor. You're lucky I let you in. You're lucky my moderators who operate outside of me, those 29 people, you're lucky they said you could be here. And you better take care of my audience, because if I hear from anybody who orders from you and doesn't get what you promised, and you don't fulfill an obligation to them, you are fired so fast your head will spin. Why can I do that? Because a sponsor, any individual sponsor on this show, represents less than 1% of the revenue that comes out of the show. Maybe 1.5%, I guess, on an annual sponsor. 1.5%. And that means I can lose them all and we'll still be here together, folks. Doesn't mean I don't value them. Doesn't mean I don't appreciate them. In fact, it means I appreciate them so much more. Because we have a relationship of choice. And that's one of the last things I want to talk to you about today, is starting to have relationships of choice in your life. Most Americans walk around, you guys have relationships of circumstances and requirements. You have relationships with people at work because you have to, because you work with them. You have relationships with a boss because you're required to. Or you have a relationship with a neighbor because you happen to live next door to them. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm not saying that any of those relationships are bad. I want to know, how many relationships of choice do you have in your life? How many people do you have to go out of your way to spend time with, and you choose to do that, specifically that aren't family? Real friends. Not friends because it's nice to say that they're friends. You know, one of the movies that always made an impact on me was the old movie. I guess it's old now. It wasn't old when I watched it. It was called Tombstone. The remake, the one with Val Kilmer and Kurt Russell and Sam Elliott and all those guys in it. And Val Kilmer's character, Doc Holliday, was out, you know, riding the range, hunting down the bad guys with Wyatt and his crew. And one of the crew members said to Doc, said, "Doc, you're dying of tuberculosis. What are you doing out here?" And Doc Holliday looks at him and he says, "Wyatt Earp is my friend." And the guy says, "Hell, Doc, I've got lots of friends." And Doc's response was, "Yeah, I don't." I immediately identified with that character. Now, folks, I'm not delusional. I know it's fiction. I know that's not the way it really happened. But I get the point from the movie. And that's how I've always felt. But so when I say someone is my friend, they're not just someone I care about, someone I want to see do well. They're in a special class for me. Someone that I have a relationship of choice with. How many friends do you really have? I think most of you will find that it's a handful. Because we only form relationships of choice and go out of our way to spend time with people when we really identify with them. I want you to focus on those relationships more than your relationships of circumstances and your relationships of requirements, because they're far more important. And those are the people that are going to be there for you when times get tough, or even if they don't. You know the old saying, it's lonely at the top? Or, you know, when times get hard, you find out who your friends really are. Well, my suggestion is, find out who they are before you get to the top. Find out who they are before times get tough. And make sure you value them, and make sure that they know that you value them. And take the time to spend time with those relationships. I think women are better at this than men, but I think a lot of women out there could learn from that too. There's probably very few people in your life that you absolutely know. There's probably even a lot of family members that you would think on the surface would be there, but there's probably very few people that when things were really, really dark, really, really bad, you knew you could depend on them. That they were just as willing to help you as you are to help them. Those people are so important. I want more relationships like that, and I want the ones that already exist valued. That's part of why I do this show every day. As far as what I think the show is becoming and where I think it's going, I think we're changing the world. And I don't say that out of arrogance. And I don't think it's because of me. I think it's because of you. And the reason I can say that we're changing the world is there's 10,000 people out there every day that listen to this show that are at least taking some actions in their life to improve what they have. That is world changing. Because you know what? One person doing it. One person standing up. You saying, "I'm not going to live the way I'm told. I'm going to live the way I choose." One person doing that changes the world. Our message has reached Iraq. Not just soldiers in Iraq. Iraqi citizens. A man wrote me a letter of how him and 18 Iraqi citizens sit around and listen to my show every day. And understand that they are their own solution in their land with a corrupt government. People in Japan. People in Sri Lanka. People in Vietnam. I don't think I'm on in China. I'm probably censored there. There's a billion people that can't hear from me. I know I've been heard in India, Australia, Ireland, the UK, France, Belgium, Germany, all throughout South America, Puerto Rico, Central America. You name it, the Survival Podcast has been heard by somebody in those countries. We're changing the world, and we're doing it together. We're not doing it because I'm a great orator or a great speaker. We're doing it because human beings have reached a point where we've decided, enough. Enough. We're not going to take this crap anymore. And that's really what the show is all about. Helping people make that choice for themselves and start to take actions on it. And I know it's a little shorter than usual, but I'm going to go ahead and close down today and just let you think about some of the things that I've said. I want you to know that I'll be back tomorrow with another practical show of what we can do. And I have to go to Frisco tomorrow, so I might do a mobile podcast for old time's sake tomorrow if I can make one of the mics work out well to get some decent audio quality out of it. But I want you to really think about the things that I've said today. I want you to think about how important it is that you're able to feed yourself and feed your family. I want you to think about how important it is that you have control of your economic finances and your life, and you don't ever put all of your money away into a place where you can't get to it until you reach a certain age, and some politician somewhere can decide to change the rules of how it works in the meantime. I want you to think about how important it is to shore up the relationships you have, the few ones that are truly relationships of choice. I want you to realize that you make a difference. I want you to realize that you can have what you want. And more importantly than you can have what you want, I want you to realize the most important thing that any human being could ever realize if they really want to have the things in their life that they've longed for, that they've ached for, that they desire. You deserve what you want. And you're going to have trouble with that one. At first, you might not, but as you think about it, you're going to have trouble with that one. You're going to second guess that one. You're going to say to yourself, do I really deserve what I want? Do I really deserve the things that I want? I've made mistakes in my life. There's people that deserve more than me. There's people that have done more than me. I'm here to tell you, it's an absolute statement. There's very few absolute statements I make. I'm telling you right now, you deserve what you want. And the only way that you're really going to be happy is for you to accept that, start working for it, and realize that the people around you that you care about deserve what they want too. And it's time for all of us to work to get those things together, even when we're diametrically opposed to what they are, because that's true freedom. I have to have my freedom to be able to defend myself, own my guns, collect my food, and I have to be okay with my neighbor's decision to feel completely the opposite. If we don't have that, we don't have true freedom. And only with true freedom will we have true happiness. And remember, we cannot define freedom for everyone. We define freedom for ourselves. This has been Jack Spirico with another edition of the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't.
You can scream, and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.